when we search for solar life in the solar system, we really look for this kind of guys, the microbes. And perhaps they are green because they do photosynthesis. We are not looking for those guys. This is the cutest intelligent alien that I found on the internet. We come to him in the last slide back. But we are looking for microbial life. So on Mars, we may find some of those creatures that like the cold, shallow subsurface. On Venus, we find maybe some of them that like it hot in the atmosphere. In the icy moons, we may find some of them in the subsurface oceans. Or on Titan, maybe some like it exotic here in hydrocarbon lakes. So let's start with Mars. Mars, of course, is very close. And if you look at today, it looks rather like the moon, that not much was really going on. But 4 billion years ago, it would have looked like that. So you had oceans actually on the surface of Mars. And the point being here that Mars today cannot be understood without the natural history, how it came to be that way. And if you look at Mars today, this is from, that's no alien tracks. That is from one of the rovers that we have, right? So temperatures, minus 150 to plus 25 degrees C, 6 to 8 millibar pressure of the atmosphere. So water may be still stable in some areas, maybe not. There's no rainfall anymore on Mars. What you may be having a hailstorm here and there, but that's about it. And lots of UV radiation. So this is not a place necessarily we call it too hospital. Well, my research group and I, we study actually something like that. The Yungay region in the Atacama Desert in Chile. This is one of the driest places on Earth. And if you look at the landscape, that looks very much like a picture, like a postcard from Mars. And the boulders here that you see, that are actually not moved by running water, they are moved by earthquakes. So we are somewhere pretty close to that. And when we look in these really dry areas of Mars, we actually find that most of this life is in rocks, in salt rocks particularly. This greenish veneer are cyanobacteria that are living in the salt rock. And this is here a pigment, cytonamine, that is also showing that there is microbial colonization of those rocks. And they live by something what we call hygroscopy and deliquescence. So that is something, you know, if you have salt there, and salt extracts water directly from the atmosphere, the relative humidity. You may have noticed if you have salt standing out there, it becomes clumpy, right? That so attracts water. And if you maybe had an egg today in the morning and you had your salt dispenser, you see that those have rice grains inside. And the rice grains are even more hygroscopic than the salt. So the salt stays dry and you can get your salt on your egg in the morning, right? So this is the same thing. Microbes use that too, because they are in a way smart, right? They get the relative humidity, the water directly out of the atmosphere. So it doesn't have to rain whatsoever, they're getting the water. And oops, that was one too fast. I wanted to go back. Yeah. So if you look over here, this nice fellow here is actually a thorny devil. And even that thorny devil has hygroscopic grooves, uses the same system as well. Now, we can learn from Earth, lessons from Earth applying it to Mars. So we start off with an aquatic ecosystem, which we had probably on Mars very early on too, like 4 billion years ago. And then we're going drier and drier, so you have some colonization, and then it's less and goes into the rock. And at the very end, you have the salt rocks. And this is going over here, on Mars too, so you have a predictable sequence of ecological transitions that occur on land when the land becomes increasingly dry. So that is at the end where you can look. And if you look for life on Mars, my suggestion is that we actually look where those salts are on Mars. and that is in the southern highlands here on Mars, where you have the chloride salt deposits. So, learning from that, there were actually life detection experiments on Mars, the only life detection experiment ever conducted. And that was a Viking lander, there were two of those. And they got kind of several results in, and the results were kind of confusing. Some results were positive, some results were negative. And well, then Jerry Soffen, who was a mission scientist, that's a project scientist, decided, well, you know, we didn't find any organic molecules. Well, they actually found some, but they thought it was contamination. So he said, well, we may have to make a call. The public wants that we make a call. He says, well, it became famous, no bodies, no life, right? No organic compounds, and there can't be any life. Well, things change with the Phoenix lander, the Curiosity rover, and the Perseverance rover, all found actually organic compounds on Mars. And they were chlorinated, and you just would wonder, what would Jerry Soffen say now? Because he actually was inclined more toward a possible life on Mars. Now, there were puzzling results from the Viking. So there's, for example, the labeled release experiment, which was supposed to show metabolism on Mars. And Gil Levin, till his death a couple of years ago, made the point that, you know, Viking discovered life. Well, there were some of the results were positive, and then at some point they became negative. One of the problem was probably that they did this experiments wet. So they put, you know, if you think about it, you know, that was in the late 70s, they put water on the Martian soil and said, okay, on Earth, organisms like water, right? We give you what you want and you metabolize. Well, the things is different. You're in a desert. And you know, and maybe there's only the organisms that are hygroscopic. They like the water from the atmosphere. So what we in essence did was some kind, if I see any one of you, you know, let's say an alien flies by in a spaceship, right? And sees you thirsty in the desert, takes you and puts you in the middle of the ocean because you need water, right? So you drowned that person, or, you know, we may have drowned some Martian microbes if they were there. So then there was another experiment, the paralytic release experiment, that was done by Norm Horvitz. And he was always, well, there can't be any life on Mars, and people wondered why he is actually part of the project. But these are the results, actually all of the results of the paralytic release experiment supposedly showing organic synthesis, or not showing. Well, that is much less than you usually see with any kind of instrument nowadays. The first one was actually positive. You see, here's a control that was 15 hits, and there were 96 hits or counts per minute. So that is significantly positive. So that was puzzling as well. Now, if you that experiment actually was done under dry condition mostly, except here at Utopia 2. And you see the count is even less than under control under wet conditions. So maybe something is going on there. Well, if we're looking for life on an extraterrestrial body, we have to expect the unexpected, right? We cannot expect exactly always the same as on Earth. So maybe there are near-surface extremophiles on Mars that use hydrogen peroxide incorporated into their intracellular fluids. Joop Houtkoper and I met up and we wrote a paper about it and said, maybe that would explain the Viking results. Now, if you have a mixture of hydrogen peroxide and water, it lowers the freezing point a lot, significantly. You can go to minus 56 degrees C and you still have a liquid. Mixtures of hydrogen peroxide concentration super cool and don't form ice crystals. So, you know, if you go in winter out, so you don't see many leaves on the trees, right? Because the water freezes, forms ice crystals and pure cellular membranes. So that wouldn't happen there either. And then, what wonder, it is very hygroscopic. And if you use that, you could extract water directly from the atmosphere. It could be also a source of oxygen, And you can even think of possible types of metabolism with it. So you will say, wait a minute. Hydrogen peroxide are used to clean things, right? To sterilize things. How can that be? Well, I can tell you that at any point of time, you have actually these guys, microbes, and that utilize hydrogen peroxide, and those guys that produce hydrogen peroxide in your mouth. And they are fine. Then there's also a microbe, Acetobacter peroxidans, that uses hydrogen peroxide in its metabolism. And do you see this handsome kind of guy? This is a bombardier beetle. If you bother him too much, he will spray this substance on your skin. And I can promise that you won't like it. However, the point is, it's a 25% hydrogen peroxide solution, and that he can keep this in his body without too many problems. So that might work. So whatever other evidence we have, do we have any evidence maybe from meteorites? Because these are rocks that naturally come from Mars to Earth, right? So the older semesters of you might remember Bill Clinton here when he made this famous speech there that they might have found fossilized evidence of life on Mars. And this was from this kind of rock. And this was supposed to be a microbe. Now, I don't think anyone believes anymore that this is actually a microbe. However, the case is still not really resolved till today, because there's some other evidence that could suggest that there actually was fossilized life on Mars. This is a magnetite chain that was discovered in ALH 84001. So that is a meteorite. ALH is just Alan Hills, and in 84, and the first meteorite discovered. And that is actually a magnetic chain in a bacterium from Kelly Lake in Canada. So magnetotactic bacteria used to have those magnetic chains. So if we put this all together, it still remains a big unknown. Is there life on Mars? We talked about the oceans, we talked about the magnetic chains, we talked about Viking, we didn't talk about methane, but that is a kind of an indicator that there is or might have been life there too, some organisms that do methanogenesis. And we haven't really talked about panspermia, because you could have asteroid impacts that actually bring Martian microbes with meteorites to Earth, or perhaps even the other way around as well. So, let's go a little further and see how we find out. Well, this is our current missions with the Curiosity rover and the Perseverance rover, and that ExoMars rover is probably soon there too. And this is a Perseverance rover, it's also the first part of a sample return mission. Personally, though, I think what we really would need is a new life detection mission. When searching for life, we have to kind of figure out what is life really, you know? The current the traditional definition, I should say, because, you know, every one of our scientists has basically his own personal or her own personal definition, is metabolism, reproduction, growth, and adaptation to the environment. So that's the traditional, and all are somewhat kind of related to that. We have to see it like this, you know. At the time when we didn't know what water was, really, or didn't have a molecular theory of water, or let's put it differently. If I ask you what is water, you probably say H2O or H9O4, better, more correctly. And we can say yes, but before we actually knew that, before we had a molecular theory, we would describe it by its properties. And having only one type of life that on our planet, that's what we basically do. So we are not at the stage yet where we understand everything about it. So, but in regard to life on Mars and maybe getting it to there or backward, we have to be considering planetary protection. So there's forward contamination, the danger of bringing Earth life to Mars, which would make it more difficult to detect Martian life, right? And we don't want to make it extinct either there. So we have to be careful. But we have to be also careful to bring back life from Mars, because that could be a problem for our biosphere. And there's this famous movie, The Andromeda Strain, so that when everything goes really wrong, this is something like that. This is not really likely, but you know, we have to keep it in mind, because naturally there's many meteoroids that actually come from Mars, and you know, we are still there. But we have only one biosphere, and you know, of course, we don't want to have any bad interaction, some toxic products also, so we have to be extra careful about that. And the issue is that it's taken care of. So let's move on from Mars. You know, that's, I want to go to some other places too. How about Venus? This is our next planet, right? Right next to us, on the other side, basically, towards the sun. The average surface temperature is 450 degrees C. Pressure is 92 bars. And so that's not very nice, right? A full greenhouse effect. And this here is not an alien artifact. That is a Soviet space probe that survived on the surface for 20 minutes. So, but there may be a history of life on Venus, right? So, you know, at some point, our sun was 4 billion years ago, our sun was quite a bit weaker. And Venus was actually what is called in the habitable zone. So water would be stable on its surface. So at that point, life could have originated on Venus. Or, you know, at that time, there was already life on Earth. Maybe life came from Earth to Venus and getting into this hot oceans of Venus. Yeah? This actual postcard of California. But, you know, you get the idea. It could have gotten there. And if the greenhouse effect got worse and worse and worse, there's actually only one place still to go for that. And I go a little bit faster through it because Professor Seeger will still talk about that as well. But with the presence of phosphine, it got reiterated that there may be a microbial biosphere in the cloud level of Venus. That is very controversial, the detection, but nevertheless, there are certain arguments that are in favor. For example, habitable temperature and pressure and stable clouds. So atmosphere is actually super rotating around the planet, what would enable photosynthesis. And you know, you could have an origin because of the surface water on it and available of critical nutrients. The problem is that there's hardly any water. It's very acidic there, and the lack of trace metals and hydrogen, and you would have to have a permanent life cycle in the atmosphere. So it's still quite difficult, but the thing what we should find out, and we suggested like 20 years ago a mission to actually sample the Mode 3 particles, and Sarah Seeger actually pulled it off and got a private mission there to go there. So I'm really happy and excited to see what's coming out. So let's move on to the outer solar system. We have interesting, really intriguing places there too, right? So we have Europa. It looks like a cracked eggshell, actually. Shows very much activity. There is a mission, the JUICE mission, Jupiter Icy Moons Explorer over there, for arrival in 2031. Enceladus, there's at least a proposal, Enceladus Life Finder, ELF. And Triton, nothing so far, but that are all very exciting places because there may be subsurface oceans. And if you look for Europa, the most likely internal structure based on the Galileo spacecraft is that you have an ice layer there, cracked. Then you have 100 kilometers of ocean thickness. So that means you have more water there on that moon than on Earth. So that should be really the water planet or water moon. Then, very important, you have a rocky mantle over here. So, and you could have the hydrothermal vents. And hopefully that rings a bell, because it could something look like this. Because that are where biology is on the ocean floors on Earth, where you have the hydrothermal vents. And you see on Earth you have all this worms and crabs and all that stuff, kind of stuff. And there may be, Europa is probably the only place in our solar system where you actually could have multicellular life. So Lewis Irwin and I, we were quite intrigued about it and said, okay, let's do some biospheric modeling. Yeah? So we go with it, we assume an energy source of powered by hydrogen. So we say we know what's about the hydrogen outgassing is on Earth. We scale it down to Europa because Europa is smaller. Use that as a base. We say a microbial mass of 4 picograms, that is about the average for a microbe on Earth. Then we know what the energy requirement is from Saccharomyces cerevisiae. So this is one of my favorite organisms because it produces bread and beer. However, we wouldn't expect it there, right? They're in the ocean down there. But it's this well-researched organism, I told you just why, and we know the exact energy requirements for it. So we just use this for now because we're speculating anyway. We don't know for sure, right? And then we put some other parameter in that are typical for biological or ecological systems. And what we come out, so this is here actually the reaction there at the hydrothermal vent, hydrogen and carbon dioxide to methane plus water. And we're coming out, there is enough possible biomass there to sustain a tertiary consumer, so a brine shrimp with 1 milligram, which weighs about 1 milligram, and that would require a size of a swimming pool to feed on. So it is very biomass poor compared to Earth, but still, you know, it's quite a bit. So now to kind of my favorite moon, Titan. That's very far out there, yeah? Moon of Saturn. So if you look through the telescope, it looks like this, an orange ball. Actually, the orange comes from organic haze, so a lot of organic material. That's how it looks on the surface here. And you see, that looks like a coastline, right? And that is like a lake. And that is actually not that far off, because the environment of Titan is very quite strange. Huh? Because you have liquid hydrocarbon lakes consisting of out of ethane and methane. You have methane clouds and methane rain. So you have actually a hydrological cycle on Titan, but not with water, but with methane. Then you have a lot of electromagnetic radiation coming in from Saturn that interacts with the clouds, and you get very energy-rich molecules. And also you may have cryovolcanic flow lavas and actually groundwater, ammonia water in the subsurface. So this is a very alien world, right? And here we can say it again, maybe life, I mean, it's very cold there because methane and ethane are liquid. But perhaps life may have origin early on Titan during its early history and then adapted to increasingly cold conditions. So does the Cassini-Huygens mission, that was actually the only mission that really went there, support the notion of possible life? Well, first we see here the flow pattern, and that looks very much like on Earth, right? If you could fly with a plane over a landscape. That's probably ethane and methane, but we have ammonia water flows as well. So, we have a smooth surface that shows that there's endogenic activity. Activity is good. We have liquid and ethane methane on the surface. Well, you know, we don't have water, but maybe exotic life could be possible with this kind of different solvent. We have flow channels, so, you know, that we just saw. And we know that there's a lot of lakes. And now I show you the only image of Titan. That's the only image that we have. And, well, never mind the albatross. A student put that in, you know. It fits very nicely from the color scheme inside. But we won't have any birds. You know, don't go out and tell someone that I told you that there are birds on Titan. Yeah, but if you look at the pebbles over here, you see the landscape looks somewhat familiar, something what you could find on Earth as well. We are actually looking at something like that. It's not quite as cold. It's in Trinidad. And in a liquid asphalt desert, we call it. It's actually natural liquid asphalt. And you see we have some difficulties to sample it. The water abundance is very low. That's why it's called a desert, even though it looks liquid. And we found there a lot of microbes, even over 900 new species, sorry, 600, over 600 species, new species. And what we found there, that in this liquid hydrocarbons, there's little liquid water droplets, and so micro droplets. And in those micro water droplets, there's a life concentrated in it. So we found, as far as I know, still until today, the smallest ecosystem that's existing on this planet. So and we published about that in 2014. So getting there is, of course, it's pretty far away. And that, at some point, I was part of that planned Titan-Saturn system mission that unfortunately never came to fruition. But think about it, would have included an orbiter, a balloon. Imagine how cool it would be with a balloon to float over through the Titan atmosphere. You would suffocate, but aside from this little detail, it would be really cool. And then he has this kind of little lander on the ethane lake, you know, because if there's life, it would be probably within the lake there, and you could sample that. So that unfortunately didn't happen. But we have the Dragonfly mission that was selected as part of NASA's Frontier program. The plan is that it launches in 2026 and arrives in 2034. And its objective is to find clues to the origin of life and signs of life, because Titan being so organic, it might have clues for the origin of life. So as conclusions, I want to tell you that there's a predictable sequence of ecological transitions in Earth's deserts with increasing dryness that also applies to Mars. And if you want to find life on Mars, we have to follow the salt, not the water. Because if you follow the salt, then you will find the water. We should consider missions to astrobiology targets in our own solar system, such as Mars, Titan, the icy moons, and Venus, and study also the analog environments on Earth. On each of those is a chance we find life. And maybe there's somewhere too where we don't expect it. And that I still want to show you because, you know, if you look at the moon, it's a dead rock in space, right? But see these patches here? You can see it with your own eye then if you look into the sky and, you know, getting a little bit outside of Amsterdam. That is, most of this is basalt flows or lava outflows 3.5 billion years ago. At that point, actually, the moon had an atmosphere of about 10 millibars. So there could have been water and there could have been life, actually, for, you know, for a small period of time, maybe a few tens of millions of years. You know, for us, it's very long, but, you know, it's 4.6 billion years old. Yes, a history. And there could be even something, you know, if you look for the origin of life on our planet, we won't find it. Because any molecule from when life originated on our planet, like more than 4 billion years ago, is all eaten up, you know, is food. And is everything is recycled, returned, and so. But there were asteroid impacts on our planet at that time. And basically bounced big rocks out of the crust, and they landed on the moon. And some of them must have landed on the southern pole where there's ice and rock. And if you look at those, we might find the early molecules that gave rise to the origin of life. And one last slide, if I may. I promised you we come back to our alien here, yeah? So what about life on Earth, right? This is, again, the cutest alien that I could find on the internet. He comes here by with a spaceship, and he looks at Earth. What does he see, or she? We don't know. I mean, well, we don't know what the gender is of that species. First, he finds lots of water, right? Well, all the blue. Then he looks a little bit further and sees large areas without cloud cover. That means enhanced UV radiation. Our alien is smart. He knows that UV radiation is not good for life. You know, it gives you skin cancer, and that's why all the time the shutters are closed here, you know, because it destroys this nice place. So UV radiation is not good. Then there's a presence of an aggressive oxidizer in the atmosphere, or we call it oxygen, and if you look further, there's only trace amounts of organic compounds in the atmosphere. Our alien is smart. Who knows? Remember, Jerisoft, no bodies, no life. There's no organics, there can't be any life here, right? And there's no organics in the atmosphere. And the atmosphere is with 21% oxygen near combustion level. And they think, oh, what the heck, let's get out here before the place blows. And then our alien looks a little bit closer. Greece is already burning, California is burning, right? That is a very dangerous place. And then our alien thinks, you know, that whole the planet is water. How could something exist, some life form, dissolved in this kind of strange compound that we call water, you know? Don't you remember? It dissolves everything if you wash your hands. How can you build anything organic in it? So our alien flies further on because there's no life on Earth. Can't be, right? Now, the thing is, I don't want to imply that there's no life on Earth, but the point is, we should not make the same mistake, right? If we look for life on another planet, we have to keep it open-minded and not just be the shutters and look exactly what we are and try to find it somewhere else. So we have to be open-minded. And with that, I still like to thank you all of it for the attention. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.